Alan Kring Productions, in association with the Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, for spring semester 2022. Today, net present value and internal rate of return. For the most part, this is a really straightforward thing to the extent that you will be able to push this into a calculator very easily, get your answers, get some nice questions right on quizzes and final exam. There are some nuances that you do want to think about in this, and where you might trip up answering a question on a quiz or the final, and I'll try to flag that out today and on Friday so that you are not caught off guard by these nuances, as it were. Before we do that, though, a quick look at the markets. It is a slaughterhouse of a day, not good at all. It's obviously bears are winning the day, and I had taken a position last night, a bear position, which was kind of fortunate on my part for me. Now, interestingly, you'll see that the Dow is down the least, about 0.75%. The S&P 500 is down more, 1.3, about 1.33%. And then the NASDAQ is just getting creamed at 2.75% down. That is, of course, the typical pattern that you see. Now, interestingly, excuse me, if you look at this, the spark charts, they're all showing kind of the same thing. The hit happened right at the bell this morning. And since then, it has just been kind of walking along. So in other words, there was one very big bad piece of news that was impounded in the prices right off the bat this morning. Since then, there's been no more bad news to really knock the market down more. So this was a bear hit on something that was grim going on early in the before the trading began today. And I saw it building. I mean, the futures markets were plowing downward through the evening and into the morning. And, of course, when the bell happened, that all came into the stock prices. And then after that, it was over. And now everyone's wandering around saying, what the heck happened there? Going over here, oil was doing well, and then it's taken a dive again. It's below 100. I don't expect it to stay there, but we'll see what happens over the course of the next few days. Gold and silver, this nothing there. No, metals aren't doing anything. Now, here's where you would think, okay, now, the equities, the money has gone out of equities. Investors have sold, driven the prices down. So now they had cash. They did not put it into gold or silver, into the metals. So where would be the next place that they would probably go? That would be to bonds. We should expect, and I haven't seen this yet. Watch me look like an idiot when I look at it. We should expect the prices to go up so the yields to fall. So we should see a negative here, and of course we don't. The yields went up. So in other words, investors, the yields went up. The yields are up, what, about 4.5 basis points. So yields are up, prices are down. So the investors are selling stocks, they're selling bonds, they're not using gold. So they're just pouring the money into their money market accounts, into cash. They're just pulling everything off to the side and saying, wait and let's see what happens now. Now, interestingly, Financial Times, London has been getting creamed, as you can see. They're near the end of their day now. And at the end of their day, they are climbing back up. So I'm almost wondering if we'll see something like that as our day begins to fade out. We're going to see the markets recovering. Nikkei just had a beating down day, and then it just sort of staggered along. I'm curious about something here. No, there's still no evidence that the S&P 500 or the Dow or the NASDAQ is doing anything. Looking at volume very quickly, Yeah, that volume is terrible. In other words, the investors are actually just bailing and then just sitting there. In other words, there's sell side, but there's no buy side going on. So you have this very thin volume that is, you know, maybe a third of a typical day over the last 52 weeks. We've still got some time left in the day, but I don't foresee anything happening. Look at that, though. That's negative. A lot of it, of course, is the situation in Eastern Europe. There is more, seems to be more talk now about a more active intervention, the stand by and give, do sanctions and all of that seems to not have had the desired effect. We've got some horrendous things happening over there. So there's more talk now about, yeah, we got to do something more than just economic sanctions. But we'll see. Now, looking over here, just a quick look at the yield curve. Well, let's try. Let's look at the current month. The current month, April. I see what I did. Okay, apply. So, well, look at this. The 3.5 was inverted. Now it's flattened. Well, there's some happy news. So the 3.5 has flattened back out, but we still have the inversion on the 5.7.10. So that's, you know, you still have, any way you look at it, though, we had an inversion. That means that we're probably going to have a recession. But it looks like the curve is beginning to, at least part of it, the short end of it is beginning to straighten back up again. Not upward arcing like you'd want it to, but it's still there. Okay, now, one thing I'm going to do here is I want to bring up Excel, and I'm going to show you, do these on the calculator, and then I'm going to take it back into Excel and do it. There is an interesting thing in Excel where Excel treats the word slash formula, NPV, net present value, differently from how it is done in a calculator. A calculator, any of the TIs, but the one that I'm using here, TI 83, 84 plus, is definite. It distinguishes the initial negative free cash flow from the subsequent free cash flows. Excel doesn't do that. What Excel does is it calls it, its NPV is actually just a present value. Let me show you what I mean by that. I'm going to take a year and a free cash flow kind of problem. And I'll put this up so you don't need to do it yourself unless you want to. You can pull out your computer and do this with me. But I'll put this up in the resources tab. By the way, I put up some stock valuation problems for you there to help you with that going into the last part of the course. But here. Okay, year, let's go with 0, 1, and then I'm going to take this down, and we're going to have a project. Let's say that we have Let's say we have a project. It's a 7-year project. I said a 7-year project. Okay, so now the free cash flows, we're going to do it year by year here. And I really don't like doing this, but just sitting here doing something like this, but it is a useful problem. So we're going to have one where the initial free cash flow, the initial negative free cash flow is, let's say, $150,000. And then in the first year, we have about $25,000 of pickup. Then the second year, you begin to get more customers looking at your product. We got it to $35,000. Then we go up to $60,000. And we've got about, let's say $70,000. And then it begins to lose its steam here. it drops off because competition is really beginning to hit hard. And then we have 8,000 in year 6, 15,000 in year 5, 8,000 in year 6. And then including salvage value, we have a total of, let's say, $2,000. Typical pattern of a product life cycle. Okay, so now, if you're doing this in Excel, now one thing that I always recommend is you put your discount rate somewhere else. Don't put it, the number itself in a formula. The reason is this. If I put the discount rate over on the side, then I can change it as I wish and do nice scenario analysis. So the discount rate is over here. So we're going to say net present value, and we'll say equals. Now, with Excel, it wants just the discount. Oh, let's try something here. Let's give it a discount rate to start with. Let's say that we're going to take this at 8%. Now let's do the NPV. Equals NPV. And you give it the discount rate, which I put in D2 here. And then you just give it the whole stream, the negative and the positive altogether. That's the difference, a big difference between, a subtle difference between Excel and a calculator is you just give it the whole thing in one swat. And we get a positive NPV. Of $17,272. That's a go. Well, let's say that instead, what would have happened if we had taken a discount rate of, let's say, 20%? Whoops. It would have been a negative NPV of about negative $22,600. By the way, don't get obsessed with dollars and cents. NPVs, IRRs, NPVs to the dollar, really. Don't even try to do it to cents because it's something of an inexact estimate anyway. So I would say that this is a currency to zero. Okay. So somewhere, let me do this. I'm going to do NPV at, what was the first one, 8%. And then the NPV at 20%. And then I'm going to do them separately up here. I'll use an 8% here, and I'll use a 20% here, and just adjust this formula a little bit. So I'm making a point here. There is a point to what I'm doing here. So that, in other words, and this one, I need to put in the equals NPV with this 20% and these. And the point I'm trying to make here D2. Wait a minute. What's the matter with D3 through D7? Oh, I see. Let's try this again. I wonder why I did that through B9. Okay. Apologies for that. There you go. Okay, so now, here's what I'm trying to get at here, is that somewhere between 8% and 20%, this thing went from a negative to a positive. At 8%, you had a positive NPV of $1,272. So if I were to draw this, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. This is the discount rate on the horizontal axis, and the NPV is here on the vertical axis. If I were to do 5, 10, 15, 20, 5, 10, 15, 20, down. At 17%, it was, what was it, about $17,000, right, maybe about, right about here. But when I, 8%, I'm sorry, 8%, it was right about here. And I'm doing this really sloppy just to make a point here. And at 20%, it had gotten down to a negative more than 20,000. Now, back in the old days, we are interested in where it crossed, what discount rate caused the NPV to be zero. That's the internal rate of return. Now, the old way we would do it is we would do this estimate, and then we would draw, and very carefully, this was all done very carefully on a graph, on graphing paper, with a mechanical pencil and rulers. We would draw this line through those two points. Now, this line actually has a name. It's called the NPV profile. The NPV profile is what that line is called. It is the relationship, graphically, of the discount rate to the net present value. And if I'm looking at this, I mean, this is a terrible. It looks like it's somewhere above 12% is where it crossed from positive to negative. Now, fortunately, gladly, we can actually do internal rates of return on the calculator. All you do is you just say equals internal rate of return, open the parentheses, and just give it that whole swat of from B2 to B9, those cash free cash flows, and you say, show me. Oh, geez. I did that better than I thought I did. Okay. Now, you want this usually to two decimal places. It's odd. Your homework sometimes says two decimal places, four, six, whatever. But whatever you need, there it is. The internal rate of return is 12.22%. That's this crossing point right here. Now, the internal rate of return, get this in your notes, the internal rate of return is the discount rate that makes the net present value zero. The internal rate of return is the discount rate that makes the net present value zero. That's all there is to it. It's that simple. First things first. The internal rate of return is actually kind of a nice thing to do right away, even before you do the net present value. Suppose that we're with a company and I'm the CFO, and I come to you, madam, and I say, here are the free cash flows. Now, I'm going to need a go or a no-go based on net present value. And you say, well, what's the discount rate? Oh, I'll get that back to you tomorrow. And I leave. So, you do the IRR. So I come back tomorrow and I say, oh, by the way, the discount rate I want you to use is 10%. You can immediately say it's a go. You see that? You know that it's a go because you did the, you knew the internal rate of return was above that, so it is not positive net present value, because any project will be a go if the discount rate is above the internal rate of return. Again, any project will be a go if the discount rate is above the net present value. Any project will be a go if the discount rate used is below the net present value. Now, this is a question that I do on a quiz and on the final. It's, I just give you the net present value and I say, well, what if the discount rate you use is? You can say yes or no without ever doing anything more. It's that easy. If I give you the internal rate of return, you just say, okay, that discount rate is above it, so no. So if I said, well, the discount rate for this project is 15%, you just immediately say no, because even if I run the net present value, I know it's going to be a negative net present value. So that's where the nice thing about the internal rate of return comes in, is that it gives you a way that you know for whatever discount rate you want to use for the project, whether it will be an accept the project or a reject the project right there. Now, the net present value, and I'll get to this in just a minute, but the net present value is actually a stronger method, but you need a discount rate to do it. The internal rate of return is used, and it's very popular, and here is how it is used. A company establishes a hurdle rate. A hurdle rate, let's give it a hurdle, let's do a project. A hurdle rate of, let's say, 10%. What this would mean is that the company will accept no project that has an internal rate of return that is above the hurdle, below the hurdle rate. Watch. So let's take this. Project NPV, or rather, project, let's say the return on investment, ROI, project A, project B, project C, project D. Project A has a return on investment of 7%. Project B has a return on investment of 12%. Project C has a return on investment of 16%. And project D has a return on investment of 5%. Here's how it would work out. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Okay, the project hurdle rate is this 10% right here. So we go through the project. Project A crosses here at 7%. Project B crosses here, up here, at 12%. Project C crosses at 16%. And Project D crosses here at 5%. So if I look at this, all these projects, their NPV profiles, relative to the hurdle rate, I see that Project A is negative at 10%. So we say no to that project because it is negative at the hurdle rate. Project B, if I look up, oh, there it is. So B is positive at the hurdle rate. So we say yes to that. Project D is profoundly positive. Where the hell is D? Oh, there. Project C is 16%. There we go. So yes to that one. I got a little confused there. Okay, now Project D, I mean, that thing is terribly negative. It's clear down here somewhere. So no to that one. So in other words, the way the hurdle rate is used is that if an ROI / internal rate of return, whatever you want to call it, of a project is above the hurdle rate, yes. If it is below the hurdle rate, no. That's how the internal rate of return is used in practice. Here's the problem with that, though. It goes back to the same problem there was with payback period. Why are we using 10%? Where did that come from? And that is a problem. It's simply saying, okay. In other words, D could be a darn fine project. Low return, low risk. But we are not going to take that project simply because we have set an arbitrary hurdle rate that will reject that project. Even though it is going to be, it's a winner, it's just not enough of a winner for our company's desires. That's where the big problem is, that hurdle rate is, again, an arbitrary choice. And that is how internal rates of return are used. They find the IRR of all these projects, and then they compare them to a hurdle rate that is company policy. And it's a yes or no based on that. But it is hugely popular, because it's a fast, dirty calculation, and they don't have to go through the pain of finding a discount rate to use for the project. Now, where does this hurdle rate come from? Sometimes they don't know. I've found that if they have a reason for it, what it is, it's usually they're setting the hurdle rate as their weighted average cost of capital. That's what they're usually doing. Okay, our WACC is, and therefore we will take no project that has an internal rate of return below the weighted average cost of capital of the company. Even though if they took on those projects, they would lower their weighted average cost of capital. And every time they take on a project above the hurdle rate, which is always a yes, they're increasing their weighted average cost of capital by doing that. So it has that downside, is that it actually biases the company's a weighted average cost of capital to go up through time. We found a project that was 22% IRR. Whoa, what an awesome thing. Yeah, well, you're going to take it? That's, guess what? That's going to raise your weighted average cost of capital because it's so risky. Okay, there's that. And really, the basic of capital budgeting, payback period, NPV, IRR, are all encapsulated in what I've shown you here. Here is a downside, though, to the internal rate of return. Now, I'm going to go through that, and then I'm going to go back. This downside, you can find a way to get around it, but it's a lot easier to do that way around it in Excel than it is in a calculator. I promise you, it is a real pain in the butt to fix this problem I'm going to show you. To do this, though, to show you the problem with internal rate of returns, a fundamental problem with internal rates of return, I have to take you back to something terrible from your past. I have to take you back to high school algebra. The oddest thing is that NPV profiles are actually examples of polynomials. Somewhere in your dark past, you might remember the degree of a polynomial. The degree of a polynomial is the highest power that x occurs to. You know, like, for example, if I gave you y equals 3x squared minus 5x plus 1, well, that would be a degree 2 polynomial because the highest power of x is 2. A degree 3 polynomial, something like y equals negative 1/2 x plus 3/4 x cubed minus 5/8 x plus 1/4. That would be a degree 3 because the highest power of x anywhere in the polynomial is 3. Taking it up here, if I gave you y equals negative 4x plus 8, that's a degree 1 polynomial because the highest power of x is this first power right there. And then, believe it or not, there is a degree 0 is a number like, is an equation like y equals 7. Because there's always a hidden x to the 0 power, because x to the 0 power is the number 1. So, in other words, what I'm saying is that in kindergarten, you were actually starting to use polynomials, degree 0 polynomials. You might remember something. Like, for example, an equation y equals 7, that's actually just a horizontal line. That's a degree 0 polynomial, graphed. It's a horizontal line. A degree 1 polynomial is a straight line, y equals mx plus b. A degree 2 polynomial is a parabola. Now, a parabola can be like that. It could be like that. Or it could even be like that. I'm getting to the point here. The roots of a polynomial are where it hits the x-axis. You notice that there are zero roots to a degree zero polynomial. There is one root to a degree 1 polynomial. See it? It can hit the axis only once. A degree 2 polynomial at most has two roots. See, in this case, it can have no roots, it can have one root, or the most it can do, a parabola can hit the axis twice. Finally, maybe a degree 3. A degree 3 can hit the axis once, it can hit the axis twice, or it could hit the axis 3 times. But the most that it could do is hit the axis 3 times. NPV profiles follow that rule. You see, because if the sign of the cash flows switches once, like it does there, see that? It will be a straight line polynomial. Did you see me drawing? I drew an NPV profile straight down. Well, what happens if the project goes negative to positive? The sign changes once. That's a normal one. But what happens if it starts as a negative project, then you get some positive years, and then it goes negative? You have to put a lot of investment in before it goes positive again. There'd be one sign change, then there'd be the sign change, the negative to positive. Then there'd be a second sign change, positive back to negative. And then there'd be a third sign change where it went from negative back to positive. That would be a degree 3 polynomial. Here's the upshot, a degree 2 or a degree 3. So in other words, this would be the normal project's NPV profile. Switches sign from negative to positive. You put money in, and then it's a cash cow. The problem, though, is that what if the project, you start out putting money in, and then the sign switches from positive back to negative, and then it climbs back out from negative back to positive. There's where internal rate of return fails, because the internal rate of return assumes there's only one crossing of the horizontal axis, one route. That's the internal rate of return. The problem is, if the sign change, there's not one, but three sign changes, then it would go down. Well, in this case, three sign changes, it would go down, then up, and then go back down again. So there would be three different internal rates of return. Well, which one's right? None of them are. It is what we call in mathematics a spurious result. The internal rate of return doesn't mean anything. I can change these sign changes here, and you'll get an answer. Excel will give you an answer. It will find whichever one it starts searching for. Wherever it starts searching, it'll probably find that root. But none of those will, it won't mean anything. It will have no meaning whatsoever. Now, some textbooks say, well, you could kind of interpret it this way. No, it's not. It just doesn't work. So in the real world of corporations, projects, capital budgeting, there are projects that switch sign more than once. Negative to positive, positive to negative, then negative back to positive. Much more common is projects that go, you put money in, okay, there's your negative. Then money comes to you, you're making money off it, but then at the end, your salvage value is profoundly negative, and so you have had negative to positive, and then positive to negative, two sign switches. That would mean that you had actually two roots, two internal rates of return. There's your problem. You cannot use internal rate of return if there's more than one change from sign switch in free cash flow. You can't use it. But Lord knows companies are going to, they want that internal rate of return. They are desperate for it. Let me show you something here. I'm going to copy this sheet over, and I'm going to put it on a new sheet and make some changes on the new sheet. Okay. And I'm going to get back here. Is there a way to make a free cash flow that has more than one sign switch into a free cash flow that has only one sign switch? Yes, there is. It's called the modified internal rate of return, MIRR. Now, I'm going to just very quickly show you what the mechanical process is. Thank heaven, Excel knows how to do it in a blink of an eye. A calculator does not. Let's take that original free cash flow, and let's say that in year two, it drops back. They get a year of experience. They put $150,000 in. They got $25,000 first year. Then they use the data to find out what they need to do to improve the product. So in the second year, the free cash flow actually dips back down to $10,000 negative. But then once it does that, the product is better. Let's just give the third year $80,000. And the fourth year, $75,000. Okay, so we have slightly altered the free cash flow, but we've altered it in a fundamental way so that there is not one sign switch. There is the first one, negative to positive, year zero to year one, Then it switches sign again, positive to negative, year 1 to 2. And then it switches again, a sign switch, from 2 to 3. And then it stays positive, thank heaven. The normal NPV, it doesn't care. NPV, it just, yeah, they do, fine, whatever. But if you're going to use internal rate of return, this right here, this 3 sign switches instead of 1, makes it so that a normal internal rate of return is incorrect. It is invalid. It is useless. The MIRR does an odd trick. What it does is it takes the negative free cash flows and it finds their present values. And then you zero out the year in which the negative actually occurred. In this case, I would find the present value 2 years out of negative $10,000, and I would put that with the negative $150. And then it takes all the positives and it finds their future values to the termination of the project. So year one, I'd take $25,000 and I'd find its future value 6 years out and add that to the 7. I'd take the $80,000 in year 3 and find its future value 4 years out and add that on the 7. And the fourth year, I'd find its future value 3 years out and add that. And then I'd find the future value of the $15,000 in year 5, 2 years out, and add that to the year 7. And I'd find the future value, good God, of the 6th year, 1 year out, and add that to the 7. Now, I want you to imagine what a pain in the butt that is. So what we ultimately do is we have a big number, negative number, here at year 0, and a big number, positive, here at year 7, and we put zeros all the way in between. Now, if you want to do that, go for it. Even with a calculator, it's going to be a pain, and then you could use the NPV. Fortunately, your Excel knows how to do this. It uses 2 different rates. It uses 1 rate, which is called the financing rate. That's the rate at which you have to borrow money when you need it. And then it has another rate called the reinvestment rate. That's the rate you can get off the money you make off the project. So there's 2 different rates here that go on. Let's say that the financing rate is 8% and the reinvestment rate is 12%. So in other words, I'm going to take the present values of the negatives discounted at 8%. I'm going to take the future value of the positives compounded at 12%. Thank goodness you could do this on the calculator. And this is the modified internal rate of return. You just write equals MIRR, open parenthesis. Now, in this one, you got to be a little careful here. The first thing you got to do is tell it the cash flows, free cash flows, all of them. And then you put in a comma, and then you give it the financing rate, comma, and then you give it the reinvestment rate. And close the parentheses. This is a modified internal rate of return. Essentially, what it does is it turns that loopy graph right here. See that thing right there? What it does is it pulls it straight out. So there's only 1 negative at the beginning, all zeros, and then a positive at the end. It literally just goes thwang like that. And that is what is called a modified internal rate of return. Let's see what it is. 10%. I'm going to put that to 2 decimal places. Now, again, I'm going to upload this to your resources tab so that you can see this in action. Here's what's kind of cool about this. That 10.07%, I look up there, how much did money cost me for this project? Oh, it cost me 8%. Well, I'm going to make 10% off this project. So this is a go. See, I've spent 8%, but I made a little more than 10%, 10.07%. So yeah, okay. We're okay here with this. I'll do another one of these on Friday. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.